We'll be listening to an interview I did at Sundance with Kim Longinato, the director of a new film called Dreamcatcher. It's a film I saw at Sundance. It's a film by Kim Longinato, a British documentarian, and it's a vivid portrait of Brenda Myers Powell, a former prostitute who helps women and young girls break the cycle of sexual abuse and exploitation. I'm not going to say any more. I'm just going to let you go right into the interview now, so enjoy. Kim Longinato, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
And Brenda Myers Powell.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? Welcome. It's really good to have you here, too.
Thank you.
Okay. I saw the film last night, Dreamcatcher, and I went to it, and I have to tell you, it knocked me back in my seat. It was very powerful. It just really knocked me back in my seat. So I wanted you to give people a synopsis of the film, just what it's about and how you found the story and what compelled you to do this story.
Well, that's two questions. The first one about what the film's about, that is fascinating because what I think it's about is probably very different to what other people think. You know, we all think it's about different things. I think it's about, in a way, it's like a family is like a microcosm for a society and a society's a community and then a community for a society. I think it's about all the secrets and lies and balance of power and all the things that we've all learned to live with and all the taboos that we don't talk about, and how it's in America and it's in England and it's everywhere. And I think it's about those things, but it's also about the power of somebody who starts with very, very little and kind of transforms herself to become a pioneer and to become a force for change in her community. And I think what I hope the film will do is inspire. I mean, obviously we can't, lots of our stories aren't as emotional and as dramatic as Brenda's, but we can take from her, from Brenda, and actually feel the strength to change our own lives. That life is a constantly evolving process, and you can, there's all sorts of things that we're all changing, and that we're not one fixed thing, we're changing all the time. That's what I see the film about. So it's like a kind of very, very edgy boyhood.
Brenda, this is the film, the story. What is it to you?
It is about secrets. It's about how secrets can actually destroy you. And why do people have a need to hold secrets when they know it's tearing a life apart? And it's about someone who has stopped being under all the secrets and decides to open her life like a book because she was basically in bondage of secrets. You know, secrets kept her out there on the streets. Secrets kept her in the company of the wrong people. So why would we continue the secrets? And then it's about hope. Hope that a society will stop allowing these type of secrets to continue so that little girls and little boys can grow up to be stronger and more trusting and loving and have hope and have that light inside of them shine instead of it being covered up by all the secrets and the damage and the craziness that they have to deal with on a daily basis. And they're not the kind of kids who get therapy, who can go and get the type of professional help. They have to deal with it in the best way they can, through anger, through drugs, through all types of self-mutilation, cutting, all types of things, and prostitution. Why does it happen in our community? Why is it continuing to happen in these communities? And it seems to be okay, and people want you to suck it up, but it's nothing that can be sucked through a straw.
I completely love that answer. I think that is a wise answer. And I think it's also about what it means to be male and female and how we're redefining those things. So you have a man who admits to having been abused, and you know, we know that a lot of girls are abused, but there's a man who's abused and how he took that and changed it, and all about violence. Mm-hmm. And how the main man in the film splits himself into two people, which I think a lot of men do. That's not unusual. Mm-hmm. I see Brenda as a lion, that in old-fashioned characters you would call Brenda, she'd have the word masculine, which she's the opposite. She's the most female. She's fearless on the streets. Mm-hmm. She's doing really dangerous things. She's fearless. But what she's most fearless about, and what has changed my life meeting Brenda, is she's most fearless about being honest about her past. These are things that nobody talks about. And there's going to be a lot of people saying, Brenda, how can you talk about these things? And she will say, because they were eating me up. You know, and you can see how it goes down through generations. not just big lies like being abused, little lies like, you know, how we dominate each other emotionally. It's everything in our lives are about power and us.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, because we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves on this in a certain sense, because the stuff you're saying is very powerful. But people need to know actually what the film is about.
Can you tell them?
Huh? Okay. I can tell them. Yeah,
actually,
I can tell
this
them.
Is interesting because I would really like to know what the film was about for you.
For me, the film was about this grotesque inequity in the world that has existed for time immemorial, since the beginning of power relationships in society, particularly focused around women, and since the beginning of when women have been forced into a subservient position. And
yes.
Then it goes all the way through, and you get to this era in the world, you get to the era of capitalism, and it takes in, it incorporates the oppression of women, but it then magnifies it and distorts it into even, you know, more grotesque forms and more deadly forms in a certain sense. Mm-hmm. And Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, made this point, and he said, you look at all these beautiful children who are born and are born female, and then you think about what is going to happen to them in their lives simply because of their gender, how they were born, you know, the degradation, the demeaning, the, you know, the suffering, the rape, the abuse, the fact that the most loved and trusted ones in your life oftentimes become the ones that hurt you the most, not just mentally but physically as well. You know, and so to me it was about someone who came out of all of that and said, no, I'm not going to allow this one to break me, but I'm not going to allow it to break anybody else either. So that's what I thought the film was about.
That is fabulous. But also,
we like
actually,
that.
We like that.
Well, in our society, we seem to have a distorted vision of who we want to forgive. We want to forgive pedophiles. We want to forgive priests. We want to forgive everybody except someone who has been labeled as the lowest and people who are not worth saving. And before this whole thing became an issue with human trafficking put behind it, prostitutes were in that category. Prostitutes were like not worth saving. They were women who were damaged goods, who were unworthy of, they had a lifestyle. Other women didn't walk on the same side of the street with them. The only time men wanted to approach them was late at night. So we became a part of our own community and made our own rules. And these rules were dominated by the pimps, by the men. So we had our own territory, not because we wanted this, but because your society, the regular society, didn't want to deal with us. Now the society has turned around and wants to rescue us, but they don't even know who we are because we've built this world and created this life. And they want to try to help, but they don't have the tools. So that's why it takes women like me, people who are like me, to go back in that world and pull people out.
At the same time, I think, look, that's really true in terms of the women on the bottom of society. This is how women are viewed, and their lives are often forced to be like that. I mean, because everything comes at you, whether it's drug addiction, whether it's the fear, because sort of overall it has an impact on men and their mental health and all this other stuff, but it's also something that they do. They do adopt the dominating position in relation to women, and they mirror the broader social relations in the society, where you have the people who run the society who come down press everybody else, and that gets mirrored and concentrated in the relationship between pimps and women who have been enslaved by them, basically.
And Johns who picked them up.
Yeah, I was just going to say
the
that.
Same
exactly.
Thing.
Absolutely, exactly. You know, here's the thing is that in your story, and I want people to get just a hint of your story, because I know it comes out in the film, but in your story, you had to make a decision that this was not going to happen anymore for you personally.
Right.
So let's talk about that a little. Because I think that was very important, and very important for people to know how that happened.
It was a process. It wasn't just an overnight overwhelming thing. But what started it was my last interaction with the streets was with a Caucasian white man in a Mercedes-Benz. I'd always considered myself being safe with that type, that category of Johns, because they didn't want no trouble. They wanted to come get their business taken care of and go back to the suburbs and leave me alone. And I wanted to leave him alone. But it was different this time. This guy came to beat up a girl, and I was the one that got in a car. And he was beating me so brutally, even after he had paid me. And getting out the car, my clothes caught hold to the door. He had started up the car and was revving off, but he drug me 6 blocks and tore all the skin off my face and my body. Now, if that wasn't enough, I was in shock walking around my community for about an hour bleeding, and people were just looking at me, and it was a kid, a little kid that drove up on her bike and handed me a roll of toilet paper and said, "You messed up." I went to the hospital. Somebody came by and had a sense enough to take me to the hospital. And this is, I guess, when the journey started for me to turn around. I entered the county hospital expecting to get help and services. They put me on a gurney, rushed me into the emergency room, pulled the curtain. The nurse came and they started to look in and see what was going on with me. The police came because I was so mad, beat up. But the policeman knew me. And he pulled the curtain and him and the nurse were talking about me as if I didn't exist. They said, "She's nothing but a hooker," he told her. "She probably took some poor guy's money and he beat her up," as if I didn't deserve to be attended to, because even if that was the case. She laughed, they giggled, they went away. When she came back, there was a guy who pushed me back into the hallway and they left me there. And I was no more an emergency because I was a prostitute. I sat there until the second shift. I didn't even know how much damage was done to me until I had to go to the bathroom. And that's where I got frightened. After I looked at my face and saw the eyelid was almost torn and my face was gone. And I began to cry. And I said, "God, these people don't care about me. They don't care if I live or die." I said, "You need to help me. You need to help me right now, because these people don't care about me." And I laid down and I wanted to die on that gurney. But a lady came in, a lady doctor, and she like, "Why has she been here for a whole shift? Her injuries are extensive. Who did this?" She pushed me into the ER. They hooked me up. They started to work on me and she admitted me. And I stayed in the hospital for 5 days. And I got a connection with that doctor who didn't ever say anything to me about my prostitution or who I was. And she just talked about, you know, our conversations. She would say at the end, "You're intelligent, you're smart, you're a pretty girl." And I couldn't understand. She would tell me that and I would cry up under the bandages because I wasn't pretty anymore. And I didn't think I probably would ever be. And when she released me, she told me to go and see social services. And social services was a crock too, because they thought very little of prostitutes. And I remembered a number and a woman that had talked to me in jail, and I called that number and I was accepted into that program. That program saved my life. Though when I walked in the house of the program, what really made me stay is that there was an ex-prostitute there sitting at the desk that I knew. And I said, "Hey, where you been?" Which gave me comfort to know that this was another prostitute that I knew from the streets. I knew she was really, you know, I knew her pimp, I knew everything. And she started telling me how she got there. And I wasn't convinced, but I was comfortable. So I started to get comfortable. And within a few weeks, I was convinced that I needed to stay there. And that they wanted me there. See, this is the difference. They actually wanted me there. I used to leave the house to go to the doctor and come back. And I used to be looking at the clock like, somebody's expecting me to be at dinner. I've got to go home. I hadn't said that in 25 years. This is what they made me feel like. I needed to go home. And even though how horrible my face looked, my other sisters, former prostitutes, didn't judge me. They embraced me. They kissed me on my scars. And they said, "We love you." So I stayed in this house and I got rebuilt. And I learned how to help others get rebuilt. And that's what they taught me, how to reach out to others after this has happened to me. And it was through an amazing woman named Edwina Gately, who is now my mother, like a play mom to me, but she's a real mom. She treats me like a real daughter. And she's from the UK. And she's still my mom. And if she hears this, "Hi, Mom, I love you."
Now, tell me this, because you went from where you're talking about you were, and it's a very moving story, but it makes it even more compelling and moving is that you went from there to now you play a similar role to all these young women.
Absolutely. So I learned that through her. And I also had an Aunt Susie who taught me how to be a lady, because I always looked at her as the epitome of lady. You know, she was something else. She still is. I used to be very like, everything was okay. I was getting myself together, and I got a lot of things quick. I got a job, I got my GED, I got a job, I got an apartment, I got a car, I negotiated a new car on my own, I didn't need anyone to go with me. You know, all these things that a man had to do this with you. You know, I felt really good about myself. I'm beginning to feel real good. I'm reading self-help books, and I'm going to breathing classes and yoga, and I'm learning how to be this wonderful woman. But there was something inside of me that was missing. So I started volunteering at shelters with women. And then I started doing a prayer thing to God and asking him what was the next step. And the next step just seemed right to go and work with the women in the street. And I didn't know how to get connected with that, so I just started going and answering people who asked for volunteers. And I would work all day. He said, well, why do you do that? I said, because my job pays my bills, but this work pays my spirit. And that's when the hole or whatever started to get filled up with the work that I was doing with the women and the way that I could talk to them and everything. And then all of a sudden, people started noticing what I was doing, and then they start calling me and, we got a job, you know, if you want to take this on. They didn't pay any money, but social services doesn't pay any money, but the job, you know, I could pay my bills and do what I liked, and I did that, and I was doing it. I decided to be the face of prostitution because I had got my face back. I didn't think God saved it for me not to, you know, show it off, kind of like that. Thank you for my face. Here I go. What do you want me to do with this? Women get out of prostitution, they don't talk about it. They don't want anyone to know about it. They don't want that man who wants to marry him to know that they had done this. I was not that woman. I needed to talk about it. I needed to pull other women out of their shells so they could talk about it so they could heal. So I became the face for, and I knew that was what I was going to do. And I talked to my daughters and they said, that's your story, mommy. You go tell your story. And I've been doing it ever since.
And that's how Dreamcatcher was formed?
Dreamcatcher was formed between two women who met in treatment, Stephanie Daniels Wilson and myself. We met in treatment, and we said that we were going to do something else. We were going to be like worldwomen.com or something. But it just seemed right after I started working in this, and she went and got her master's in social work, and we came together and did this. So that's how that came together. You know, I've had people tell me, you need to stop telling your story. And I look at them, and I said, you need to get a story. It's not professional for you to tell your story now that you're an executive director. But if I don't tell my story, how would another girl know out there that she can be an executive director? How would she know that now that she's standing on a corner or she's under control of some guy, but she can look at him and say, one day I'm going to be an executive director, you know.
That's what's special about Brenda, is that she's true to herself, and that's really unusual, that she's become this woman. She's got a car, she's got a kid, she lives in the suburbs. You know, she's become a respectable, what we like to call respectable person.
A vote.
And yet she's true to her past, and she's proud of her past because she's proud of how she's got to where she is. And that is what's very, very unusual as well. Because these secrets and these lies and all these things that are in all of us and in our families, on all levels, all the way up, they eat away at you and they damage you and they make you less of a person. And what Brenda's doing all the time is she's building other people up, and in doing it, she's becoming a bigger and bigger person herself. She's becoming more lion-like and more, and that's what she's done for me, you know.
Now, how did you find out about Dreamcatcher?
Through Lisa Stevens, through the producer. She told me about Brenda and that she's been trying for ages and ages to make a film, but she couldn't get the money. And I think she thought that if I was part of it, you know, I think she needed somebody to be part of this so it'd be easier for her to raise the money. I think that it really helped. She didn't know me. You know, we met through making this film. And I felt in a way really lucky that Brenda and Lisa had come into my life and been asked to do it. It's been such a privilege, you know. It's been a huge thing for me. It's changed my life.
In what ways?
I think it's made me think, a bit like a woman said to me last night. She came up to me from the audience and she said, I'm going to go home and I'm going to change my life. And I said, how? And she said, I'm not beaten up at home. Nobody lays a finger on me. Nothing happens to me. But actually, you know, I've got very low self-esteem, and if Brenda can turn her life around, I can. And that's what Brenda's made me feel. I mean, she didn't tell me the details of it, but she went out with her head up. So I think how it's changed my life is I've always believed in the power of change, but it's really made me believe in it more, because everything in our society, in our culture, in the way we're always told, things don't really change. You can't change things. You know, that's how things stay the same. But Brenda's taught me that actually really, really bad things can become really good. She's like an image of that. She's valuing what's happened to her in a way and turning it around. Just what she said. She's using everything bad to happen to her that happened to her as a way of helping other people. That's pretty mega, really. It's huge.
Brenda, what I saw in the film from the very beginning, the way you spoke with the women that you were speaking to, it wasn't condescending. It wasn't, oh, I'm going to help you do this, I'm going to help you do that. And the most important thing I thought was that actually you kept emphasizing, and all through the film, this is not your fault. And you know, in the world today, women get raped. They get raped on campus.
Absolutely.
and they're told it's your fault. It's what you wore, you know, all this other stuff, that it's your fault. But you've been very, very strong.
Very strong, because I remember thinking that it was my fault. Thinking because I was a little girl who had a big butt, men looked at me and it was my fault because I had that. I matured early. Everything was my fault. If I hadn't have been sitting on his lap, it was my fault. If I couldn't be a kid, I could never be a kid. I was always not a kid. Was that my fault? Having to have more responsibility than I couldn't even take on? No, it wasn't my fault. Was it my fault that my grandmother was an alcoholic? No, it wasn't my fault. Was it my fault because my mother died and I had to be in different places that affected me differently, and that things happened to me that shouldn't have happened to me? No, that wasn't my fault. These girls, it's not their fault that mommy doesn't believe me, that I don't have support in my family. You know, it takes a village to raise a child. And then to be believed is the most amazing thing. And not to have to take the blame for such an adult action, for such a horrific crime, for actually being enslaved. How could you take the responsibility for that? The responsibility is not on yours. It's on a society in whole that keeps allowing these things to happen and trying to put a pink bow on it when it does happen. Let's go to Vegas and where prostitution on the outskirts of Vegas and it seems on the inside of Vegas is legal, but let's arrest her in another city or state. You know, what are you going to do here? Is it going to be something that is going to be a form of legality, or are you going to persecute when you feel like it? Because everyone is got their own opinions, and that's what we know that they'll have in this film, their own opinions. But it's not your fault. The fault has been here for many centuries, as you said in the beginning, because males feel like they are prevalent over females, you know. And this is also an issue with young boys too, you know, but it's just about power and control and demand, supply and demand, and how it's abused to the utmost with human beings. You know, they call me also in my town the Harriet Tubman of human trafficking. I kind of like that because I liked Harriet Tubman. You know, she was a gangster. I love her. You know, she took on some stuff that, wow, amazing things. And that's why my challenge is I take one day at a time, and I accept the challenges because you have to be fearless in order to forgive yourself, forgive those who harmed you, and then take that and use it to help other people. You can't be bitter. You can't be caught up in what did happen.
But you do have to be very firm in your conviction that you're right in what you're saying now. And what you said last night, you said, look, I didn't make the decisions to do this. You know, I didn't, it wasn't like you were sitting there saying, oh, I can be a prostitute, I can be a teacher. Mm-hmm. Actually, you didn't bring the people in from the suburbs. You
didn't
enslave people. And I wanted you to talk about two things. One is you use the term enslavement a lot, and I think it's really important for people to understand why that is. And then I wanted to ask you again about this, it's not your fault, because they always say you make the decisions that determine the course of your life. And, mm-hmm. and you know, you look at someone who's living the life that you were living from a very young age, and any decision you made was actually circumscribed by the conditions you were living in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was nothing else there for you. You lived the life that you were born into, But you had to fight to not be killed by that, to not be eaten by that. So let's talk about that.
It was hard. It was hard. Everywhere you looked, there was predators. I remember going back to school after having my kids, and it was in a night school because I worked at a hot dog stand in the daytime to help buy my baby's milk and stuff like that. And I remember that high school GED teacher pulled me and let everybody leave the class and pulled me up to the side. And he grabbed my hand and he put his finger in it, moving it around very seductively. And he was telling me I didn't have to worry about my GED as long as I act right. And he was a horrible, bumpy face looking man. I looked at him and I was so disgusted, and he made my skin crawl. And I never went back to get my GED because I couldn't go back there. Those are the type of circumstances that you have to live through, that you feel abused. You feel like somebody just urinated on you after that happens. And then you have to get through that without support, and you have to process that through the best way you can. These are the type of things that we do on a daily basis, and the issues that we follow and come to us, you know, men talking to us as if we're garbage. You know what I'm saying? And we don't matter. And then we have to process that to feel better or to stand up so I can get up the next day and put my makeup on and look in the mirror and tell myself I'm beautiful because I don't look like a fashion model. And I may be kind of pudgy or I may be kind of full figured, but I'm beautiful. But I don't get that attention. I have to give that attention to myself. We have to go through so much to be who we are. I don't know what it is to be a man because I've never been a man, but I definitely know what it is to be a woman, and I know what it is to pull myself out of a barrel and try to stay above that hole so that I can stay outside the hole and persevere. I never thought that I wouldn't, but I know it was so many girls that were out there that were hopeless, that just didn't have that peace, you know. What was I to do? Leave her in the gutter? No. No, it wouldn't have been cool.
And we'll just have two more questions. This is the one about enslavement, because you've used that so many times, and I think it's really appropriate and really important that people understand what you mean and why you say enslavement.
It's an act against human nature to enslave a woman and make her prostitute her body for the services for another person to gain money, okay? And then all kinds of rights are taken from her. The right to choose, the right to be anything that she is. We take human rights away when we enslave women in human trafficking. Domestic violence is an act against human rights. When a man financially abuses a woman, and the economic piece, the control piece, where you can't do what you want to do in a society that says you're free, but you're not free in your own home, or you're not free if you're under pimp control. And then for another person to walk up and open his wallet and say, I can buy you, and look at you as if you're a piece of merchandise, look you up and down and decide that he wants to have you come in his car or come in a hotel room with you, and you're a stranger, and do an act that is supposed to be so beautiful and personal, but here I am doing it with you and I don't even know you, but you think you have the right because you paid me money, and you, for those little 15 or 30 minutes, you own me as if I was a slave, and you expect for me to perform as one. So when I say it's an act against human nature, it is. I thought that we had got rid of that, but here we are now in 2015 facing the very same issues that our forefathers fought for. So how is it not an act of slavery?
Kim, I have to ask you one more question, which is, you, and it's very hard after this because I'm listening and I'm thinking it's so powerful and so true. And you, the last film that I saw of yours was Selma.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually was very similar in a certain sense.
It is, yeah.
It was a film about a young
Muslim
woman. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the fact that you watched her life,
mm-hmm.
but you were talking with her when she was over that.
Mm.
And she had gone on to social success and all this other stuff. But the similarities between Selma's story and the oppression of women.
Different continent.
Yeah, can we talk about that, how that hit?
I think the similarities between Brenda and Selma wanted to be a poet and wanted to do something with her life, and yet she was locked up in a little room. And exactly what Brenda just said, which I thought was just amazing, what she just said about those women in that village as slaves. They are. As soon as they reach puberty, they have to belong to a man. That's the only way it can be. So they have to get married as soon as they reach puberty. They have to be kept in the house until they're married. So they're being seen as merchandise that can't be damaged. They mustn't be damaged. They must be kept intact. They must be kept virgin. And the way you do that is keep them in the house. And then they're passed on to another man. So the transaction is between father and husband. And that's why I'm so excited about same-sex marriage, because the way that heterosexual marriage, and it's been done in a way that people just accept, I mean, even the words behind it, the father gives the daughter away to the husband in the church. And that has always really shocked me, and you can cover it up any way you want, but that is what is happening. The father walks with the daughter down the aisle and hands him over. So the woman is like a merchandise. It becomes clear. We have to change all of these things. What's so interesting is that what we call normal, you know, we say, oh, Brenda's unusual. And when you actually look at what's normal, a man handing a woman over to the husband, you realise that we take for granted so much. And once you start exploring what it is to be a female, when we can all get to that point where we can see each other, we're not looking in terms of gender. We have to redefine everything. That's why I love meeting people like Selma and people like Brenda, because they're redefining their whole cultures.
Brenda, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kim, thank you once again. Really enjoyed talking
thank
to you.
Thank you.
All right, welcome back. That was Kim Longinato and Brenda Myers Powell from the movie Dreamcatcher.